Assalamu alaikum, everyone. My name is Muhi Khwaja, and today on the Muslim Philanthropy Podcast at American Muslim Community Foundation, we have on Justin McCarthy, who is the Senior Director of Development at Smile Train. Welcome, Justin.
Thank you so much. Assalamu alaikum to you and all of your listeners today. Thanks so much for having me.
Appreciate it, of course. I wanted to get a chance for get to know you a little bit better and just learn more about Smile Train and share the great work that you guys do. So before we dive into all of that, if you could just share a little bit more about your background and your journey to Smile Train.
Sure. I'm happy to do that. It's a little bit of a different journey in that I really, for the first 25 years of my professional career, I worked in a business development capacity, for like a sales capacity for marketing service organizations. So direct marketing companies, advertising agencies, public relations agencies. And my role really was to pitch new business. So I pitched diapers and batteries and airlines and automotive companies and all kinds of products and services around the country and then around the world. And more than you need to know, but in 2015, I was coming up on being 50, the big 50 for me. And I was really looking at, you know, Muhi, what do I want to do for kind of the second half of my life?
Sure.
And I had always done things on the side that had meaning to me, whether it was volunteering at my local food bank or, you know, taking on a role for my alumni association in Southern California where I live or things like that. And I thought there could be a great opportunity for me in the second half of my life to use the powers that I had developed in the first 25 years of my career for good and to really impact and make a difference in people's lives more directly. And not that the work that I did initially, you know, pitching batteries or diapers or whatever, it had impact for people, but it wasn't truly making a change in the lives of people really directly. And so I really started to look for organizations that would value the experience I had kind of as a business developer and that would give me the opportunity to do good in the world.
That's really unique. And, you know, I think there's a lot of transferable skills from, business development and sales to fundraising, you know, a lot of relationship building, a lot of pitches and presentations.
Absolutely.
So Absolutely. I'm and glad that you were able to find that.
And a reason to believe.
For sure.
And that was something interesting that you bring that up. I think when I was trying to make the transition or thinking about the transition, what I ran into, Muhi, was I ran into some organizations that were absolute that my skills didn't transfer. They couldn't make the leap. And then there were other organizations, nonprofit organizations, and I think this is a trend kind of in the industry where they are seeking people that have a different business background and can bring that to the table. And so what I quickly started to think about is I really need to focus on the organizations that are interesting to me and that are powerful and meaningful to me and just talk to those people. And what was interesting is that there were organizations like Smile Train that really valued the experience that I have. Mm-hmm. So it was really neat.
Yeah, I think, you know, especially when it comes to fundraising, that mission alignment, values alignment provides a lot of purpose, right? And
absolutely.
If you feel like you're contributing and making a difference and getting the world to be a stronger place, a better place for others, sure, you can do that through a business and still find a lot of meaning. But I think the nonprofit sector provides so much more in impact in certain ways that are just, you know, in alignment with the way that I see things.
Totally agree. I agree 100%. And I was fortunate at the time, really, that I was looking. I really wanted an organization that did amazing work, that was changing lives really directly, an organization that was spending money responsibly, someone that was small enough that I could feel like I could make an impact, and someone that was open to me without the direct experience. And Smile Train at the time, we had been really driven for many years with kind of a direct mail model, direct marketing model. And what the organization made a commitment around the time that I was looking is they said, you know, we have people that are engaging with us all over the country and around the world. What if we made the investment to get people to actually go out and meet with some of these donors and understand why they're giving the money that right. they're giving, and try and understand that more and maybe align Smile Train's needs with some of the philanthropic goals of some of these people that we're giving. And so that was really kind of the impetus of my job here in the Western United States, which is how I started.
That's really great. And essentially, you know, in your portfolio of supporters, is it primarily people on the West Coast? Is it a certain region? How did Smile Train kind of create that for you?
Yeah, it's a terrific question. And my role's evolved a little bit since I've been at Smile Train. So I started at Smile Train. I just celebrated my 6th anniversary with Smile Train. And when I started, my responsibility was primarily individual donors in the Western United States, as well as some foundation work and then some corporate work. But it was really more supporting for the last two, the foundation and the corporate work. It was really supporting teams just physically on the ground in the West when I would go travel, frankly, to see individual donors. And my role has evolved over time. So now I'm fortunate enough to work with a wonderful team of gift officers. And I work, I'm here based in Southern California. I have a team member in Salt Lake City, someone in Chicago, someone in Miami. And then I have a peer that also covers the rest of the country with his team as well. But it's been really cool, and I'm doing more and more high net worth individuals, but also mm-hmm. getting involved in some of the corporate work as well, which is really rewarding for me. And it's kind of a way to kind of bring me full circle, if you
totally
will.
Yeah. And you know, I want to I'm really interested in kind of the growth of Smile Train, you know, from when they started these direct mail campaigns to now focusing on relationship managers, major gift officers, and everything in between. So if you don't mind, let's go into what Smile Train does, and then we can talk about like when it started, how the growth kind of changed the organization, and what you guys currently do.
Sure. I'm happy to share. Smile Train is the largest cleft lip and palate charity in the world. And we were founded in 1999. So we started doing surgeries in 1999. And amazingly, since that time, we have done over 1.5 million surgeries around the wow. world in more than 85 countries. And what's terrific about that is, and what was really attractive to me, Muhi, is the model of Smile Train. And so I'm sure that you've heard it's not a mantra, the
golden rule,
the proverb.
Proverb, okay.
Proverb, you know, you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day, you teach a man to fish, and you fed them for a lifetime. And that really is the model for Smile Train. What we do and what we've done to achieve those 1.5 million surgeries, and we're beyond that now, is we've really taken that teach a man to fish model to heart. And so what we do is we go into regions of the world where we know there are people with cleft. And we know about 200,000 children are born every year with cleft. And wow. and before the pandemic, we were doing about 100,000 surgeries a year. So it's amazing the number yeah. of people that we're reaching. But as you can tell just by the numbers, there's a backlog of babies that grow up that aren't being served. But the teach a man to fish model is really very powerful in that. What it does is we go in and we identify hospitals and then surgeons that are capable of doing the work in the region. And then we give them the tools and any additional training or contemporary training to do the surgeries in the most efficient and contemporary ways. And then we pay for the surgeries. And so the benefit of that is that the doctors and the teams are on the ground. So surgeries and care can be provided in language and in culture, which is super important. Another model is the mission-based model. And so with a mission, typically a doctor from New York and Chicago and LA will fly into a region, they'll do X number of surgeries, and then they come out. There's opportunity for both models, but we're really proud of the model that we have and we think has done such amazing work around the world, because doctors in the regions can then teach other doctors in the region in their own language and in their own culture how to do the work. And what's been exciting is that over time, I mean, surgeries will really always be our priority, because we want, that's really the core of what we do. But our line of service, if you will, has started to increase into areas that, like, we call our comprehensive cleft care. And so that can be kind of pre-surgery, where we're working with moms and dads and families to make sure the baby has nutrition. Often babies are with cleft lip and palate have trouble feeding and they have trouble breathing sometimes. And so our team can kind of provide some pre-care so that we make sure that the baby's weight gets up to where it needs to be so that the surgeries can be done. And then what's really exciting too is we're doing a lot of kind of post-care follow-up. So it's things like speech therapy, additional nutrition, it's orthodontics, it's dental work, it's some psychosocial things like anti-bullying campaigns and things like that.
That's great.
So we're really, as we've grown from kind of 1999, really as a surgical partner, we're really reaching more and more to find and serve the whole child, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great to see. Not only was there that cultural sensitivity back then, so ahead of its time, really, but also these types of wraparound services that the family can kind of have more engagement through the process. And I think that's really empowering.
Absolutely. Absolutely. For sure. And one of the things that's, I mean, when we talk about the numbers, 200,000 born every year and 100,000 surgeries, I mean, if you really break it down, it's like a child with cleft is born every 3 minutes somewhere on the planet. And SmileTrain, because of wonderful donors that are contributing to support this work, we're engaged in surgery to repair the cleft about every 5 minutes. So it's really amazing.
Wow.
It's pretty monumental.
And in terms of like when the most opportune time is to have the surgery, it sounds like they're pretty young in the process. So, you know, what about regions where, say, they didn't have access to a hospital? Is that kind of where the mission model comes into play and they go into other remote areas or villages?
It can be. One thing with our model, we will provide care for any person, any age. And Muhi, some of the stories that you could see on our website, which is very straightforward, smiletrain.org, and there's a story section, you can see adults that have lived their entire life with a cleft lip or palate or cleft lip and palate, and the stories of their repair. So anyone with a cleft lip or palate, we will provide care for or support care for sure. But you're right. Our team, because we really have such a global team at this point, we have relationships and partnerships that are helping us find relationships in the region. So as we identify regions, even very remote regions, that we need, that people doing what we call patient recruitment. So going out and actually finding patients, because in some parts of the world, children that are born with cleft are actually hidden. Mm. You know, they're kind of hidden away, and parents can think of it as a negative reflection on something that they've done. And so public education and patient recruitment is a huge part of what we do in the developing world, to say, this is not something that you caused. This is something that can be repaired And this is something that frankly can be done for free. So take advantage of it. Really cool stuff.
Yeah. And then in terms of your fundraising and efforts to cover the costs, do you have basic standards of like X amount will help X amount of children? What is the cost to donors to kind of invest into this model?
Yeah, I mean, that really is one of the most amazing things about the work that we do. A surgery can be done for as little as $250 in certain parts of the world. There's a range of care cost because the range of severity of a cleft lip and palate can be fairly dramatic, to be honest. In some cases, you see a child with a simple lip involved. Others have bilateral where both there's two kind of entry points and then a complete palate open. So the range can be fairly dramatic. But it's interesting you say that, Mohi, because one of the things that we're kind of looking towards the future with is packaging kind of other opportunities. And we have some of that now. We have things like that we call smile grants, as an example, where people can fund transportation or food or lodging. Mm-hmm. Or replace income for people that have to travel. One of the biggest barriers that our teams around the world face is travel to sites for care. It can be hundreds of kilometers, which can be expensive and take people away from their daily revenue, their daily income, which in some cases can be a reason that people don't do it. And so we have some donors that support smile grants. We have some donors that support specific regions of the world. We have other donors that provide equipment or vehicles or support us with some technology innovations that we're doing, everything from kind of enhancing what we call SmileTrain Express, which is the largest database of cleft surgical and treatment procedures in the world. So we're kind of taking that to the next step as we introduce, comprehensive cleft care with speech therapy and orthodontics to actually capture the audio files of the before and afters with children, the before and afters of surgery, the before and afters of orthodontic work and things like that. So really very interesting stuff. I'm working with a donor now on a Smile Finder app, which will be it's in development now, and it'll be something for a cell phone where travelers or healthcare workers around the world, if they run into someone with cleft, they could take a picture of this person. And they, once they have internet connection, they can actually enter some data. They can provide immediate feedback for the mom or dad about feeding and then provide the closest medical facility that'll provide the surgery for free, as an example. So donors are doing amazing things.
So let's talk a little bit about like how you've seen the organization transition and kind of grow. So in your opinion, whether it's for SmileTrain or just nonprofits in general, what have some of those challenges been, and what ways has SmileTrain adapted to those challenges to continue to grow?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. To me, I would say I think the three probably largest challenges, which all of us probably face, Mohi, are one is awareness, really. And I know that maybe sounds strange. I mean, for the level of surgeries that we do, I run into people every single day that say, SmileTrain, what is SmileTrain? And I think as nonprofit people, we kind of get in our own lane sometimes, and we think, everybody knows about what we're doing. And I think that's been a challenge from the beginning for SmileTrain. It's gotten better and better over time. But I think some of the things that we're doing is that we're finding new paths, and we're finding, frankly, new partners. So it's everything from, talking to celebrities, doing wonderful podcasts and reaching out to folks like you. It's speaking with donors about the organizations that they're part of and having them advocate for the work that we do because they believe in it too. So that's been something that's been more powerful. And I think we've also, I mean, advertising has been something that we've done, and we're trying to do more and more kind of earned media things, you know, a lot of public relations type things that are getting the word out and informing people about the great work. So I think awareness would be the first thing. The second thing I think that all of us face as nonprofits is really effectively communicating the difference that I think can be made, the difference that can be made by the work that we do, and being able to communicate that to potential and current donors. And I think one of the things that SmileTrain has gotten really good at is storytelling. And that's telling from, and I think initially we really focused on the patient. And I think one of the things that's been positive is that we've started to have people talk to their peers. And what I mean by that is we've had, you know, donors talk to donors or be the example of the work that they are providing for, or partner surgeons or partner hospitals in a particular region advocating for the work that they're doing. And then sharing the amazing stories of the surgeries and how they change families' lives around the world. So that's the second one. And then the third one for me, and I may be talking too much.
No, not at all.
The third one for me is really how to activate people, right? Is, you know, how do we get people, once they're aware of something, once they're like, wow, that really makes a difference. I think sometimes people are, paralyzed is probably too strong a word, but they're just like, how does it work for me? And one of the things that I think SmileTrain is getting better and better at is that we're trying to encourage people to use the things that they love to do to raise money for causes that they care about.
Right.
And a couple of examples of that is, like, we have a young leadership circle in several cities around the country. So young professionals that want to network with each other, like, they can do it for a cause now. We have Team Empower, so people can do a marathon or a triathlon or a bike race in, you know, in Germany or in London or in the Philippines or in Chicago or in New York. So it's something that they're doing to for themselves, but they're meeting other people and they're raising money for a cause. You know, we do faith-based things where churches, you know, church groups are knitting blankets and selling them, or elementary school children that are learning about the environment are recycling bottles and, you know, providing money to help a child. And I send them a picture of the child that they've helped, or things like that. So for us, that's been a step that we've really tried to take, is really whatever it is that you do. If you're a baker, sell your baked goods and use that money to do good for somebody else.
Yeah, I think these are definitely translatable for all organizations. Like, it's awareness, advocacy, activism. So just being able to engage your sphere of donors, supporters in each of those ways. And I think one of the relative things that you touched on in that last bit of activism, of engaging different segments and groups of people into your mission, you know, AMCF, we offer what are called giving circles. So it's a group of family or friends. They want to learn about different causes together. They pool their funds together, and then other nonprofits can come and present to the group, and then the giving circle disperses the funds after they've listened to the organizations that members have nominated. So, brilliant. Yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunity across the country to really grow the number of giving circles to engage people in their activism and provide more advocacy for the organizations, and then really creating more awareness. So I think it really flows well in terms of exactly what you laid out as challenges and how people can engage and offer to help with that.
I love it. I'm going to take your giving circles idea. I love it. I think it's
really- For sure. And, you know,
I think people love to do good, and
of course.
And I think they love to share and participate. And so I think it's really hitting all those, or ticking all those boxes. So congratulations on doing that.
Oh, thank you. One of the ones we're excited to hopefully launch is Interfaith Giving Circle Confronting Hate. So looking at people putting their money where their heart is, right?
Love it.
People love doing interfaith work, and it's necessary and promotes tolerance and understanding, and really has tremendous impact. But now what if those groups of people who sit on interfaith councils across the country came together to learn about causes like Smile Train, or dozens or hundreds of organizations, to then talk about how they're coming together to end bullying, to end hate, to end so many different things. And that's kind of the vision behind that one.
I love it. And just the idea of a diverse audiences coming together toward a common good, and seeing and sharing the same result is pretty powerful.
For sure.
Really cool.
You know, what are some of the areas in which you see Smile Train? Like, tell us a little bit more about, like, kind of why it got started, and then kind of what you're continuing to do in that trajectory.
Well, I think Smile Train got started. Our founder, Charles Wong, was a wealthy businessman that owned a technology company, and he knew of the challenge. He was from China, and he knew of the had an experience where he saw the challenges that people with cleft had, and he really he founded Smile Train because he had experienced a mission model and was challenged because he thought, wow, you know, if 60 people come for service and the organization is only able to do 42, like, how do you tell these 18 people that they can't have surgery now? Like, who does that? And how can we, like, there's got to be a way that we can figure this out. And so he really put his money where his mouth was, and he founded Smile Train in 1999 to do that. And his, I think one of the things that you said earlier is that he really was before his time, where he said, we really need to listen to the people on the ground.
Sure.
They're going to be the best resource for us. They know how to connect to the people. They know how to find the people. We just need to support them so that they can do the work and then provide the care on the ground and then continue to grow it from there. And so that's really how the model was born. And it started first in China and then just seemed to kind of move from there. We had a wonderful gentleman who was our chief program officer for years. He recently passed away, but he was an amazingly charismatic gentleman in India. And he grew our programs in India exponentially. India is about 40% of the work that we do. And we have amazing coverage in India. So he really grew that program. And it just started to grow from there because of the model and the strength of the model. So really cool work. And the surgery, really probably up until the last 3.5-4 years, surgery really was the core of what we did. And what we were finding, because we were hearing from the ground, is the work is great and we've made an amazing difference, but there are some other challenges with speech therapy or orthodontics and things like that. And is there an opportunity or an appetite to kind of expand that a little bit? And so that's really something that we've done more. Surgery will always be the core of what we do, but we want to make sure that we're serving kind of the whole person and the whole community. If we want to make people very productive and members of their own communities.
Yeah. I think that agility and adaptability and foresight of the organization, you know, when you have good leadership, when you have that startup mentality of like, how can you always find the solution and what are the programs that you can invest in? I think that's where the business best practices come in so much for the efficiency of nonprofit organizations. So it's really fascinating to see kind of how the founder came from the business perspective and more than likely instilled a lot of those best practices into the nonprofit as well.
Yeah, for sure. And he had a huge heart. You know, he had an enormous heart and wanted to do really good things and have something that was sustainable, that would just continue to grow and grow.
Yeah. So our first donation to Smile Train came from an employee at CA Technologies. So that's the first connection.
Very good.
And the second connection is that donor is also my sister. So she worked at Smile Train and told me about Smile Train, and she knew I was in this area. So that's how we all got connected.
Very good. I love that. I didn't know that story. So that's really cool. Really cool. I mean, that for me has been the most powerful experience is really kind of meeting people where they are and listening to, I mean, that's been so amazing is really engaging with donors, whether they're corporations or foundations or individual donors, and hearing their story and if they have a connection or why they want to do something really good in the world. It's really neat.
Yeah, and I'm continuously blessed because I feel like I'm almost a major gift officer for all the organizations that our community foundation supports, right? And, you know, I was just crunching the numbers and, you know, we work with 90 families who have donor advised funds. They've supported more than 271 nonprofits with over $3 million since 2017.
Terrific.
So,
I mean, that's,
you know,
really powerful work. And I think community foundations are such a great resource for people that want to connect, you know, like with your organization that where they trust and they believe in the good work that you're doing and that you'll use the money in a way that's effective. So really cool stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
And you guys are, I mean, compared to Smile Train, you guys started in 2016, right? So you've done amazing things.
Fairly new.
In that short amount of time.
Yeah, so, you know, we're really inspired by the donors and really just seeing their generosity and being able to play a small part in facilitating that and connecting them with great nonprofits like Smile Train is meaningful. So, on that note, like, tell us a little bit more about your personal favorite charities, if you'd like to highlight a few.
Sure. I mean, of course, Smile Train, and Smile Train, I think, is just efficient and effective. So they continue to do amazing work. A couple that are more personal for me. One is the LA Regional Food Bank here in Southern California, and I started a program with my alumni association almost 10 years ago. I'm a Boston College grad. And so one of the things that we wanted to do is service was part of kind of my educational community. And so we wanted to kind of gather people together to actually gather, but to do something that was productive and helping other people. And honestly, Muhi, when we got to the LA Regional Food Bank, I was overcome with this incredible need because of the huge amount of food insecurity here right close to my home. Mm-hmm. And it was shocking to me. Like, one of the things we talked about earlier is awareness, right? Like, this is in my own community and I had children in school and things like that. And I would see little bits of it. But when it was actually quantified for me by the organization, I thought, wow, this is really important work. And it's my fellow people. It's here. So that was that's important to me. Another one that I think is really interesting is the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And what's powerful about that is that you're listening to the person that's impacted and you're making a dream come true. And we all have dreams. And I think sometimes when challenges are presented to us, sometimes the delivery of that dream provides so much hope that's so powerful in itself. It gives you hope for your own kind of survival, but it really kind of makes me feel good about the world.
Yeah, it's like good inspiring good, just continuous. Yeah, it's like, you know, those tearjerker moments of like, you see this video, it's inspiring, you get that feeling, and how do you then translate that into action? And volunteerism is like the perfect opportunity for that. In addition, of course, to charitable giving, right? But we love seeing people give of their time, their talent, their treasures, and continuing to do that.
For me, the Make-A-Wish, what's powerful about it is the wishes are so diverse, and yet people really step up. You know, donors step up, but then organizations step up, or airlines step up, or hotels step up, or, you know, attractions step up and make these dreams come true. And
it's like trickle waves.
Yeah. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Cool. Any other charities you want to shout out?
I think those are the ones.
I think
those are the ones that I mean, there's so much work, so much good work being done. And I think certainly the pandemic has really kind of exacerbated, I think, some of the challenges, you know, with homelessness and food insecurity, employment. I mean, I think more and more myself and my family are just trying to do things in our own community to just help each other and be supportive of each other.
That's really important. And I hope that the listeners kind of take advice from that in terms of being able to make a difference in their local communities as well.
Yeah, there's so much need.
Wonderful. Well, Justin, this has been a fantastic conversation, and I'm glad that I got to learn a little bit more about yourself and about Smile Train, and just really a pleasure having you on.
Well, I'm so grateful to be able to share time with you. It was an easy conversation. I usually talk too much, so I'm grateful.
No, this is good. Yeah.
and I'd love for anyone to be in touch with me if they want to learn more about Smile Train, smiletrain.org, or you can reach me at jmccarthy@smiletrain.org. That's it.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Be safe.